Headline news, television, the morning of May 7th, 2019. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex are settling into life as a family of three after welcoming their 7-pound, 3-ounce baby boy. Prince Harry announced to the world on Monday his wife had given birth to a boy and could not hide his happiness at becoming a father for the first time to a baby he said was absolutely to die for. The infant is believed to be the first mixed-race royal baby. Back-to-back, immediately next, the same news without any hint of irony, a story about a baby born in prison. To a mother left unattended, even though she cried out and said that she was almost ready to give birth. She struggled, she labored, and she gave birth to a beautiful baby girl in prison, living with mental illness, unattended by anyone, not even a physician or a guard. Or a family member. Two babies, two scenes, two news stories, back to back. Not a blink of an eye, not a sense of irony, not an acknowledgement of the contrast. One baby whose name will be known and whose photo will be shared again and again and again. Immediately surrounded with medical care. Another, whose name might never be heard again on television, born to a mother in prison. What does it mean for us to celebrate the births of some babies and not that of others? What does it mean for us that we can live in a world where a mother labors and gives birth to a child in a jail cell where no help comes? What does it mean to live with these contrasts, especially on this day when we think about motherhood, about nurturing, about relationships, about children? I hope today and every day that we will recall, that we will recognize, that we will realize that those contrasts exist and that they are real as we remember these two births of these two children, a baby boy and a baby girl. Let us pray that they will each grow up knowing that they are loved, that they will each find strength and nourishment, that they will each be told and will remember and will know that the God who created all the universe loves them and surrounds them with that God's Holy Spirit. I think I know why we do what we do. I think if we hope for great things for our own children, we hope that they'll be surrounded by top-rate medical care. We hope that they will be surrounded by people who are delighted to see them and who have great aspirations for them. We hope that they'll have warm clothes. We hope that they'll have enough food. And we fear that we won't be able to care for and nurture our children. We fear that we might go through difficulties like bringing a child into the world in a place where no one will help and there seems to be no hope and there's pain and there's anguish and it's dark and it's cold. And we fear that, and so we try to not think about it or talk about it or even open our eyes to the images. We tend to talk about those things for which we hope, and we tend to be silent about those things that fill us with fear. And so, back-to-back news stories, on a weekday morning that a baby boy may someday wear a crown, and a baby girl was born in a jail cell while her mother struggled to give her birth with no help at all. Sometimes we focus on the royal, sometimes we focus on the ideal, sometimes we focus on that which is glorious and hopeful and joyful and lovely at the expense of the struggle, of the ordeal, of the tribulation, and we separate those. And sometimes when they happen side by side, a newscaster doesn't even blink an eye or change facial expressions. What would it mean to put the absolute royal next to the absolute struggle of life side by side and realize that they both occur in the midst of God's providence? We have a chance to find out today. That's precisely what John says he heard and saw in the 7th chapter of Revelation. Just before what was read for this morning, what you would read is an account of John having heard about all of these people gathered from the 12 tribes of Israel, 12,000 from each tribe, adding up to 144,000. A wonderful, complete biblical number, 12 twelves. John heard about all of these who needed to be there in the throne room of God because they represented God's covenant with Israel. This was a place for them. God's glory and honor were present in that place. And John then turns, having heard this, and he looks, and he does not see the 144,000 of the Israelite covenant. He reports that he sees an innumerable crowd, more than he could count. And apparently John was a pretty good counter. He was able to count out the 144,000 by listening anyway. But there were more people that he could count, and they were from every language, people, tribe, and nation. Side by side, those who were a part of the historic and holy covenant, 12 twelves in their fullness, and then innumerable people from everywhere, all languages, peoples, tribes, and nations. There they were present. John knew who the ones he heard about were, but he wasn't sure who these other ones were there in their white robes. What he finds out is this: they're the ones who had gone through the great tribulation, the great ordeal, the great struggle, the great strife, and for whom God's Lamb had been and continues to be salvific. They'd washed their robes white in the blood of the Lamb, and God's care, God's providence was with them. 144,000, part of the covenant, glory and honor, and those who had just gone through the greatest struggle from everywhere. Pink skin, tan skin, brown skin, black skin, all skins, all tribes, all peoples, all tongues, all nations, God's providence covering all. What a wonderful scene, and what an incredible remembrance, and what a hopeful story. Because here's the thing. When you hear the story about Meghan and Harry having their baby, you're just so filled with hope and joy, and you just think, wow, it's going to be neat, and what would it be like to grow up being a prince? Right? When the prince gets My Little Pony, it's really a little pony, right? The prince does princely things and reads about the little prince. He's a prince doing those kinds of things. Or whatever it is he'll be called. But you get my drift. But then you hear a story about a baby coming into the world in the midst of incredible struggle and neglect. Mother's in jail. She's struggling with mental illness. She's not being treated fairly or kindly or at all. This baby is born in a jail cell, and you think to yourself, what a God-forsaken scene. And then Revelation reminds us that there are no God-forsaken scenes. Even those who go through the ordeal, even those who have faced the greatest tribulation, are under God's care and love. And isn't that the way of it? Isn't it true that those most important relationships in our lives, like the relationships between mothers and their children, relationships between caregivers and those who receive care, the relationships between family members and their beloved, the relationships between communities who look after one another, those happen through thick and thin, right? Those happen every single day in the midst of struggle. So while it might be nice to imagine what it would be like growing up in a royal family, it's also important to remember that we all grow up in the midst of struggle, in the face of strife. And for those who have the most tribulation, for those who endure the greatest ordeals, those relationships and connections of love are so very important, and they are not God-forsaken, they are God-filled. Look back on times when I felt like I was in the midst of struggle. Times when I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. Times where I felt fear or anger or frustration. And it's at those moments that I needed those relational connections most. I imagine that's true for you as well. And someone is with you through thick and thin. It's so important during those thin times. So very, very important. That's the promise we have in Revelation. As John sees this vision of God's care and God's covenant and God's expanding and expanded covenant, what John sees is a God who is there for those through thick and through thin. Even those who have come out of the great tribulation, even those who have been put through the ringer, even those who are coming out of struggle, even those who thought they couldn't make it, even those who thought that they had been forgotten, find that they are in the presence of the God and they can celebrate and rejoice and they are beloved and there is care for them. Doggone it, if God doesn't love like a parent. Doggone it, if God doesn't love like a mother. And of course, that should come as no surprise because we see God doing that kind of thing all through the Bible. Bending down and molding the first people carefully by hand out of the clay of the earth. Looking at the people and longing to let them know that God is nearby, reminding them that God was there at their mourning cry and that God nurtured them as they grew. Jesus looking at Jerusalem and saying that he'd longed to care for them as a mother hen cares for chicks. The gospel spreading through people like Paul the Apostle, who says in 1 Corinthians, I'm feeding you milk because you're new at this. When it's time, I'll have solid food for you too. Doggone it, if God's love is not mothering love, womb love, compassionate love. As we celebrate that love today, that love that God has for the world, for all people, let us open ourselves to it. Let us understand that it's not just there for us when we're feeling like we're having a jolly royal day. Though those days are welcome, and sometimes few and far between. But that love is there with us when things seem thin and we're having a rotten sort of day. Or worse than just a rotten sort of day, even when we feel as if we're God and human forsaken, even in a jail cell where a woman gives birth to a baby girl, struggling in labor, wondering why no one is there to help. And yet, doing the work of a mother, giving birth to her child, holding the infant to her breast and waiting for what will come next. There is no place or time that is God forsaken. Even though you may sing the blues, even though you may sing that nobody knows the trouble you've seen, God knows. You do not fall outside the circle of God's care. You do not fall outside the scope of God's love. You are remembered, beloved, special. If we see John's vision with him, and we understand God to be sovereign of the world and lover of all people, how might we share that love? Not only in the thick places, not only when there are resources everywhere, but in the thin places, the forgotten places. How can we be those who remember those places, those times, those people? Today and every day, remember that you are beloved, you are called to love, and your love is an act of sharing God's compassion. Your love is not only a symbol but an embodiment of divine love. And that your love, as it reaches beyond your family, into our community, and even beyond what we know as our own reach, is so essential to the world in which we live. So I pray today, the little babies, the little baby boy born across the sea to wealthy and famous parents, to a little baby girl born here in the United States, to a mother who's just come out of and is still enduring a great tribulation. And for all children, those just being born, and those celebrating 70th, 80th, 90th, 100th plus birthdays, let us never forget that we live within God's care. We are called to receive, celebrate, and share that love. Let us always remember and never forget so that we can look forward together in hope. And for that, thanks be to God.